The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and good morning. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 6th of May. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio. And you know yourself, you wouldn't tune in unless you know we've got a 2 hours packed bonanza for you. We're going to keep you up to date with all the big happenings, of course, around the region and further afield. We've got conversations that matter and, of course, your views, your comments, whatever you want to get in touch with us on. And I have some comments I need to get to from yesterday as well, because yesterday was a big day, a busy day, with the various topics we were discussing. But the lines are open for you right now. We start again, 086 60 25000. That is the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25000. Give us a call if you prefer on 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Watch the programme if it suits you. YouTube covers you for all your mobile devices and, of course, your smart TV or your Fire Stick. And we're across our Facebook pages as well. Right, now, let's go to the papers. The Finn Valley Voice is out for you this morning. Major award for designers of Ballybuffet Regeneration. Ballybuffet man Ronan Friel is one half of Paparaski's Friel, the Donegal design firm behind the ongoing Ballybuffet regeneration process. This week is celebrating a major award for a more modest but linked in spirit project on Critch Island, a building which forms a dialogue with its surrounding rock formations and coastal ecology and is widely acclaimed. More statistics out today, which perhaps emphasise what you already know, and that is how it's becoming increasingly more expensive to live in this country. Soaring food prices, energy costs and health insurance costs is putting pressure on household budgets in the Irish Independent. This is the elevated prices are costing the average household close to €2,000 a year, according to nationwide survey carried out by market research company iReach and seen by the Irish Independent. The findings come after one electric and gas supplier announced a price rise, with more expected to hike prices in the coming months. Based on the findings, the average increase in bills per household has worked out at €165 a month so far this year, and that equates to €1,980 over a year. Food prices, particularly for meat products, have been rising at double-digit rates. Home heating oil, which many of us rely on, has shot up by €500 for 1,000 litres since the outbreak of the Iran war, and petrol and diesel prices have spiked, prompting two cuts in excise duty by the government. And just above that in the same paper, Ireland now has the most expensive, or is the most expensive country in the EU for electricity. We seem to be told the same thing on a weekly basis. But anyway, electricity price rises last year mean Ireland again has the highest household charges in the EU. The hikes have forced the average household in this country to pay around €480 a year more for their electricity compared with the EU average. So that's not €480 on your bill last year. That's we, as part of this EU, are paying an extra €480 a year more than our neighbours in other countries. Research from the EU statistical agency Eurostat show consumer prices here are higher than in Germany and Belgium, which are the next most expensive. Prices per kilowatt hour in this country are more than 40% above the EU average. Now, you can say whatever you want to say about where we are and all this type of stuff, but it still feels very much like when you have companies like Prepay Power, which I would say, and I'm not judging anyone or saying anything bad, but you know, I used Prepay Power mostly in the past, and it was because to control the cost of the bills. Even though you're paying a bit more for it, you kind of, you know, because you were paying a bit more for it, but you sort of felt like you were in more control of it, and then you didn't get this massive bill every couple of months, which then you would struggle to pay, and it would leave you 2 weeks or 3 weeks catching up. But then what would happen? You'd have these weekends of the thing going, you know what I mean? And you'd end up having to put a fortune in it on a Monday to shut it up. So Prepay Power, I think, maybe is what a lot of people use if they want to have more control of the budget. Yet Prepay Power has told its 248,000 customers that they are going to see the first energy spike, the first price since the war in the Middle East. So those that perhaps maybe are trying to control their budgets the most are the first to get the hit. All the while, our electricity 40% higher per kilowatt than the rest of Europe. I don't understand that, and no one has made a legitimate argument to me as to why, because everywhere you look, there's a wind turbine. Some of them aren't even turning, but everywhere you look, in this county at least, there are wind turbines. And I know it's not going to supply good electricity all of the time or when we need it, but why did we build them then in the first place? What is the function? What's the benefit? We were told there was a benefit, right? So we say, you know, take your wind farms. It's all good for the environment, good for your pocket. And here we are with a... I don't mind the look of them. I'll just put that on the record. But here we are with a landscape in Donegal, our peat bogs with concrete in them, with all of these wind farms. And we're paying the most for electricity by some shot than anywhere else in Europe. And no one really explains to us why or gives us an out or whatever. You know, it's just that that's just the way it is. The majority of us here on this island... of Ireland, would vote for Irish unity as part of the EU, according to a poll. An EU sentiment poll indicates 73% in the north would vote for the UK to rejoin the EU, while over 70% north and south say the EU should become more independent from the US. Sorry, a majority of people on the island of Ireland would vote for Irish unity as part of the EU. Okay, I don't understand the context, but anyway, it's still an important vote. So 73% in the north would vote for the UK to rejoin the EU, while over 70% north and south say the EU should become more independent from the US. The poll shows a continued decline in satisfaction with the EU since 23, with issues such as migration and the cost of living cited as concerns. European Movement Ireland's Island of Ireland EU poll 2026, conducted by Amarc Research, found support for Ireland staying in the EU is 82% in the Republic, 76% in the North, and the survey was carried out among 1,200 adults in both jurisdictions, which is a low enough old number. It's good for a survey, but a low enough number. So 8 out of 10 of us still happy enough to be in the EU. Obviously, we're all watching with interest what's happening in the Middle East. It's the front of many of the papers today because this is effectively what is dictating the cost of our petrol, diesel and home heating oil. Well, Iran launched missiles and drones at the United Arab Emirates yesterday for the second consecutive day, leaving the Middle East braced for a possible resumption of a full-scale war. The threat to a precarious ceasefire came as the United States said there was a lane of safe passage for commercial shipping through the Strait of Hormuz and warned Iran against further attacks in the strategic waterway. Now, Iran is not backing down to the US at all. And this passageway that the United States claims to have opened close to the Oman border, no one's going through it because insurance companies won't cover these vessels. And Iran has great capability to strike these boats, but the US is saying it will protect them, but no one's taking the US on. And this is going to be a big problem for Donald Trump. And I don't know who's coming up with these plans or notions, but that's all they are. And there's absolutely no way he can guarantee safe passage of these multi-billion euro vessels laden with billions in euro in oil. Many of you following this story, I'm sure, of the virus on a cruise ship. When something happens on a cruise ship, it gets far more attention than anything else. It's in there with, and I'm not conflating the seriousness of the issues, but it's in there with sort of planes missing and stuff. Like, so you could have an awful situation whereby someone could go into an African country, a village in an African country, and massacre 150 people, and it wouldn't even make the news, which is absolutely horrendous, isn't it? But you could have a plane go missing with 90 people on, and if it's never found, it will be literally talked about to the end of days. And problems on cruise ships are also things that seem to find their way onto the news cycle and are very then hard to shift. Two aircraft are being sent to the stricken cruise ship, the NV Hondius, for a medical evacuation for a sick British passenger and a fellow Dutch crew member. They will be airlifted out to the Netherlands along with the female relative of a German man who passed away on May 2nd. Oceanwide Expeditions, the ship's owners, said yesterday the medical evacuation of two individuals required urgent medical care, and the individual associated with the guest who passed away on May 2nd will occur using two specialised aircraft. From here, the patients are to be immediately evacuated to the Netherlands. So there is a virus of sorts. The World Health Organization said that there may be have been a rare human-to-human transmission of the rat-borne hantavirus. It said seven cases, two laboratory confirmed and five suspected, have been identified. Now, of course, since we went through that COVID thing, everyone's up to high dough about viruses and when you hear terms like human-to-human contact. But it seems to be very much isolated to this ship, but they are being quarantined effectively. And Enoch Berg, the jail teacher, was sent back to his cell yesterday after again refusing to purge his contempt of a court order banning him from his old school. So just so you know, this school he was banned from over which it started with him refusing to use preferred pronouns, and it escalated to a fallout with the principal and management, which eventually led to him being sacked and asked not to go to school. He continues to go to school. They got a court order saying, listen, you can't come to the school that you're sacked from. He's also appealing that sacking. But he's still locked up. He must like prison. He's still locked up, or he's very principled. The defiant trans row educator told a hearing, I shouldn't be in prison. I should be in my classroom. I should be with my students. Well, that's not going to happen, with all due respect. Judge Alexander Owens ruled in May 23 that Wilson's Hospital School in County Westmeath had validly suspended Burke from his teaching role following a spat over pronouns with the then principal. That principal's left, and as I say, he's appealing that dismissal. His suspension stands, so he's banned from the school grounds. He still turns up. He's in the nick. Now, we got a contact from a listener, and it reads as follows. I went to Galway Hospital 8 weeks ago to see a maxillofacial specialist. My appointment was for 10:30 a.m. I had to go down the night before and stay at a cost to myself. At 12:30 p.m. I got up and spoke to the receptionist about the wait and then got called in. After an x-ray, I was told I needed a mouth guard. I asked for it to be sent to my dentist and I'd get the mouth guard I needed. I've rang now several times. I keep getting told it hadn't been signed off on yet. Now this morning, I get told I have another appointment to see him in September. But what's the point in that? Surely he can't be that far behind in his paperwork to sign off on a mouth guard. So, you know, we invite you to get in contact with us and we get in contact with them. The caller says, not the caller, the HSE says, while we cannot comment on individual cases, if any patient or family has concerns or questions in relation to the care, they should contact the clinical team or the hospital directly. Now, people don't come to us as the first port of call, okay? But anyway, they say, the HSE, we regret that any service user should have a negative experience. The HSE has a feedback, comment and complaints process in place. So effectively, they are saying that no point complaining, we must complain to them. But we'll see now how this might impact on this person getting their mouth guard. That's as much as we can do in that regard. I'm joined on the programme by Social Democrats Deputy Alan Farrelly. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good to have you on your programme. Right, you've been looking at hospital parking charges. What stands out for you, Alan?
So really significantly, what we're seeing in this correspondence from the HSE is over 70 million, 73 million in charges by patients, visitors and staff in HSE-run hospitals over the last 5 years. That, to me, stands out as a staggering amount to be charging people, but also that there's been a significant jump, particularly in the last year, where over 17 million of that 70 million has been accrued. So what we're seeing is, in a programme for government or many government representatives saying they want to look at this, they want to see a way of reducing these charges. Actually, what we're seeing on the ground now in HSE-run institutions and hospitals is that this is increasing. And I'll give you the example of Letterkenny Hospital, close to yourself, where we've seen a couple of years, 2021, 22, where that was a very, very small figure, whereas last year we've seen over 400,000 in fees being paid by, like I say, patients, inpatient and outpatient visitors and staff. So overall, this figure is very, very concerning. It's in stark contrast to what government has said they are trying to do. And that's why we've written to the health minister this morning asking for urgent action on this. It's simply unacceptable.
And, you know, and whilst the Letterkenny University Hospital figure was low for a time, as you say quite rightly there, it's increased significantly. But there is still a huge variance from hospital to hospital. Why is that? Is that local hospital management, regional HSC? Why can the experience be so different dependent on which hospital you attend?
Well, fundamentally, it's because they're allowed to have this discrepancy whereby there's no single contract. So of these 40 hospitals around the country, there is no one contract that I'm sure would work in some way to improve efficiency and to make sure that patients who are, you know, receiving very important services are getting a similar experience around the country. We don't have that. We have arrangements whereby local hospitals sign contracts with service providers, either manage the car parking facility or to manage and upgrade the car parking facility. So we don't have that. And that was part of our correspondence with the health minister this morning, to ask for the HSC to consider a single contract around the country. But ultimately, what we need to see is a cap. We need to see a reduction in the fees that people are paying. We've seen the Irish Cancer Society out on this morning saying this is a real hidden but a very important cost for people who are experiencing cancer treatment, whereby it becomes very, very significant over time, that consistent fee that is being charged. And quite often we might know from personal experience whereby it'll be friends or family that are bringing people to hospitals, and they don't want that to be a service or a charge that's put on people. It's difficult enough, it really is, to be going through this experience. So we need to see an alignment between the HSC and what government reps are saying here. It's not simply good enough to give, positive sentiments that this will change if we're not seeing that on the ground, as opposed to actually what we're seeing is huge increases over the last 2 years. It's not good enough.
No, and even if it was a situation that the fees had to stay, it's what you're getting in return for those fees. Not much. There seems to be inadequate parking locally here in any case. And it doesn't seem to be a very pleasurable experience. You know, you hear all the time of people struggling to get a parking space. I understand maybe fees were introduced to avoid the misuse of hospital parking. I don't know if that's still the case. But, you know, it's an extra charge, as you say. It's like a health tax or a sickness tax. But then really, you're not even getting a very good product in return.
No, in many settings, you're getting a substandard product. And I can give you a local example whereby someone who I'm familiar with in my life went, thinking it was a short outpatient appointment, and put a ticket on his car for a duration of an hour and a half, 2 hours, and it turned out to be a much longer appointment that he had, and then he ended up with a ticket on his windscreen to come back to when he had finished that. We see these many different arrangements. There's no flexibility. Then you must go through the appeals process. We don't see cost efficiencies across HSC services, and this type of money that's been garnered and being brought in as revenue by hospitals could be found elsewhere. It's simply not acceptable. And ideally, what we want to find is ourselves a situation where, at a minimum, we see appropriate service caps, price caps for inpatients and outpatients specifically. Ultimately, we'd love to see that fee being waived altogether. We don't need our hospitals to be charging patients or that fact. And I don't buy for a second the idea that what this is, a disincentive to stop commuters or to stop local shoppers or to stop people from using that car park for a different reason. That's not the case. In many situations, there's other car parking opportunities for people to do that. This is a very important service that should be very close by for patients. We need reform in this, and I'm hoping the minister will reply to me in the coming days with some sort of signpost.
Yeah, we'll see. OK, listen, thank you very much for your time. Deputy Alan Farrelly there of the Social Democrats. For 3 years, the charges to us at Letterkenny University Hospital, it's the only hospital in Donegal, of course. 2024, €178,000 they took in. 2025, €402,000. Some of your comments, Enoch Burke. You're after saying that Enoch Burke must be fond of prison. Did it ever cross your mind? And Enoch Burke maybe, and is a man of principle. The media seem to be a government mouthpiece on this issue. government mouth. What do you mean? I don't even know what the government thinks on this issue. This is a law, so you could say a judicial mouthpiece, certainly not a government mouthpiece. You obviously got the text out really, really quickly as well, because I says he either loves prison or he's very principled. But it's interesting that you never heard me say or is very principled, and then actually included it in the text. But I appreciate your text. Keep them coming in. Thank you very much indeed for that. But I did say he either loves prison or is very principled. Enoch Burke is not sacked, he's suspended. The real question is, why is the school dragging its heels on hearing the appeal on his suspension? Have you seen the footage, though, of the attempts to hold the appeals? He has been contesting the makeup of the appeals board and who might be present as well. So it's a two-sided foot drag situation. But I'll read on. What are they trying to hide? And because of that, he's well within his rights to attend the school. Pity the media wouldn't tell the truth instead of wanting to be so PC and woke. I'm neither PC nor woke. Well, maybe I'm a bit PC, but I don't think I'm woke. What element did I get wrong here? Okay, so suspended, appealing that suspension. You don't go to work when you're suspended in any other environment. I think if I was suspended from here and also wanted to come into work anyway and present the show, and someone else was in here and I kept standing at that door and wanting to come in, I don't think that would be seen as normal behaviour. But anyway, don't be flippant. He has principles, cheeky bugger. I did say he has principles. He must be very principled indeed. What's your opinion on the proposed 30-metre moving statue from Dublin? I'm not sure. Is that a joke or something? I've not seen that. How come there are only two hydropower stations here in Ireland and we're trying to promote sustainable energy? Good question. Bad petrol. Here's one for you. Hi, Greg. I got 115 or so euros worth of diesel around 4 weeks ago. The diesel was contaminated and did a lot of damage to my car, over a 1,000 euro garage repair bill. The manager in the shop is telling me they can't find me on camera or they don't have any till receipts. I paid cash at the time. Is the garage responsible to cover costs of my repairs for the bad diesel? It's a tricky one, really, because I suppose there's a couple of things you have to do. You have to prove that you got the diesel there. It could be tricky to prove that the diesel was contaminated unless other people in that area, and I have to be careful because there are many garages in this eastern part of the county, and I have to be careful that, you know, we can't name the business specifically, and also to mention the name generally, the area generally, it casts aspersions over all of the businesses in that area, so it's a little bit complicated. But you'd have to prove, wouldn't you, that the diesel was the cause of your woes, even though you know it is. But you'd have to prove that. So I don't know. The diesel, I presume the garage would have some responsibility if you could find a way to prove that they were actually liable. There's a water leakage, I'm told, in Windy Hall, Letterkenny. The water main is busted. I hope Irish Water are getting on top of that. Lastly, just before a break, I was in court yesterday as a support person and made some very interesting observations. There were about 250 cases, and the majority of them were on the third or fourth time of being called. They have to keep showing up, and yet they know their case will not be heard. In one case, a fella told me his case has been dragged on for a year and a half. It's a shambles that people are being put to this cost. The room is full of Gardaí, solicitors and barristers, all at the expense of someone, but mostly the taxpayer. Why is the system so slow? In my friend's case, he's not living in the county, so he had to take the day off work, travel here for a specific time, and then to be told much later in the day, that the case would not be heard. Can anyone explain why this system is so disorganised? Is that a norm? It might be worth maybe getting onto someone in the legal profession to sort of get a sense of what's going on and how common this type of a day in court is. It does seem like it's very inconvenient for an awful lot of people and ties up an awful lot of resources and costs an awful lot of money every time you get those people all into court. We're joined on the programme now by Minister Michael Moynihan, Minister of State for Special Education and Inclusion. Thank you for your time, Minister.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be with you.
Right. Now, there has been quite a bit of, forewarning, but still, at the same time, people's lives are busy and people can miss notes or notifications or what have you. There's an important deadline. It's Friday the 8th of May, and it's a deadline for payment registration and, if you are eligible, to enter medical card details for the school transport scheme for the upcoming academic year.
Yes, Friday the 8th of May is the closing date for it, and I'm encouraging all families, parents and guardians to go on to the portal to make sure that they have registered if they're looking for school transport for their children primary and post-primary school. It is important that we have that information because we intend to work very hard over the next couple of months to roll out the school transport system as we've done every year. But it is the payment details are on it, and then if you are eligible and you have a medical card, the service is free, so you should need to enter that. But the closing date is Friday evening, and it is important that every family are registered because it closes on Friday, and then both the Bus Éireann and the Department of Education will be reviewing the applications and then, you know, planning out the routes for September of 2026 for the school year 2026-27. And I know from long experience that the value that families put on the school transport system and having a ticket on the bus is hugely important, and we don't want anybody to miss the deadline. The portal is closing on the 8th of May, and it's important that the information is inputted. We will then be making based on the information and the demand, to make sure that we have the best possible service up right across the country for September of 2026. And I suppose the one thing that we would say that this year it is slightly earlier than it would have been last year. That is for us to make sure that we have as much forward planning done and that we're not into the August, September time in trying to grapple with trying to get contractors and routes and so forth. But it is important. And thank you for allowing me to on your radio station this morning to make that important point, because I know the value that the school transport has held within your catchment region.
Yeah, for sure. Just in relation to who needs to apply, is it everyone, or is it students being enrolled in school for the first time, or perhaps maybe their address, home address has changed or switched schools?
Everybody needs to go onto the portal to make sure that their details for this school year, if they're applying for the first time for primary or post-primary, or if they're renewing, they have to pay for the next school term on it. So it's everybody that is looking for a school transport system in September 2026. So it's important that everybody goes on it. A number of notifications would have gone out. There has been a campaign right across local media, including your own radio station. I just heard one of them there as I was waiting to come on. But it is important that we get the information in, and we are looking at a number of counties where we are concerned, about the update. We thank you for allowing the opportunity to make that point. But all families who are looking for transport in September 2026, should apply before the 8th of May. With their pay details, and if they have medical cards, enter their medical card details.
Has there been any change, or what is the procedure for maybe children of Ukrainian families or those in IPAS, EROC centres? Has there been any change in how those students accommodated, or how they must apply, or what have you?
So all must apply. Like, I suppose we have a number of accommodations, but within the IPAS centres, they too must apply on it, because we wouldn't have the details in some of the accommodation centres. And I suppose students and families would be moving from one location to another. I suppose we have reached out as much as possible to families who have had previous applications. But, you know, everybody's very busy. And even yesterday at a meeting that I had with a number of parents had said, oh, I'd missed the deadline. And I'm quite concerned about that, because we are using all available to us over the next number of days to make sure that we remind people of it. Everybody should, whether they're in the what if they're looking for transport, they should go on into their details and see their eligibility and pay for the ticket by Friday. And I'm appealing to everybody.
It comes up all the time here about where you're eligible to get sort of your transport to, in terms of the distance you are from the school, and parents want that little bit of choice. Am I correct in saying there is some sort of a pilot in relation to that, but still nationwide the old rules apply?
We have about 25 pilot projects working throughout the system. I suppose the first thing we would have to say is that the value that the school transport system has by parents and families. And I suppose when free education came in, it was a case of that the transport was provided because people didn't have transport themselves. Now, with families walking and challenges, the busy lifestyles that people have, the transport system has become even more valuable. And we are looking as the pilot projects will be evaluated over the next while to see how best we can reach out further. I suppose we have seen the increase in the transport over the last 5 years from 120,000 to 180,000 people, students that are using the transport system over the last 5 years. It has it is hugely valued, and I suppose the one thing that if you look at it from a national point of view, yes, the more public transport we are using, the better we have. But also to try and make sure that we are looking at the distances and so forth. The transport scheme itself is costing the state somewhere north of 500 million at the moment. Mm. It has increased dramatically over the last number of years. But it is providing a very, very dedicated service.
No,
and
I
very,
get that. And I think those listening who have to pay for private transport are looking on in envy. There's no doubt about that. Even though there's been an increase, it's still much less than some are paying. But I suppose it's a case of whether or not all of that money that's being spent is delivering the best service. And that maybe is what people challenge, or maybe that's what these pilot projects are testing.
Yeah, the pilot projects, we are looking at right across, I suppose, to make sure that we're getting the best value for money and reaching reaching as many students as possible. There's no doubt, but the state is putting in huge resources to provide the school transport system. We always, and I know your station and public representatives in Donegal, will always, the people that are the people that don't get the ticket is where the challenge is every August and September. But the pilot projects are really to look at how best we can integrate the school transport system into public transport, if possible, in areas. We're also looking at the usages on the buses, leap cards, in terms of gathering the data to how many seats are used on a daily basis, to see is there a capacity within school buses as well to maximise the use of the school transport. And the value for money we're getting is that we are transporting students right across the country, particularly rural Ireland, to education centres, both primary and post-primary, and indeed special education as well. I suppose that's the money being spent.
Would you be of the view that, parents, guardians should have more choice, that to avail of, school transport, you shouldn't have to choose the school that is closest to you? It seems go ahead.
I suppose we have an obligation to make sure that education is a constitutional right for everybody, and the state is to provide education, and then we had the free transport system after free education was to get people to and from the education centres in the least cost effective way for families. But all of that, we have some communities where they, and it's always a flashpoint across the country where the communities may be equally distant from two or three schools. Mm. We have to look and study that to see how best we can serve. But it's also important as well that we look at efficiencies.
Sometimes with respect, Minister, sometimes, and we see this a lot in Donegal, the way the distance between schools is worked out is really quite bizarre. There's often a case of a school here whereby the transport system uses a effectively a sea road, if I could describe it like that, over a mountain as the distance point between a population area and a school. So we have to make sure we're doing it correctly and with common sense. I'm not expecting you, by the way, to comment on any specific example. That would be completely unfair, but you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I suppose we look at the school transport from the person's home, and it has to be on a route that is accessible, that a road that is accessible, and we have to make sure that we have the, you know, what is the nearest distance by road from the student's house to the school. There are some anomalies that always show up in the system. If you put in any into any of the mechanisms we have for measuring, there are anomalies in it. But I suppose, by and large, what are we doing? We are, this year, we have the, as I have emphasized a number of times, we have the closing date on Friday. We're also trying to have the information correlated earlier in this, so that we
have
better information.
On. I get you. I'm conscious of your time. If you pay for your ticket on the portal by the deadline, are you guaranteed a seat?
No, we are only the vast majority of people will be guaranteed a seat. Not everybody, because, you know, pressures on routes and whether they're concessionary, whether they're eligible. But what it gives us is that we have the earlier date, and anybody who has paid for the ticket, and because of some challenges in particular areas, and we can provide that seat, they will be totally reimbursed. But our aim is to try and make sure that we get everybody on the bus. But that may not be practical in every single instance. Mm. But our aim is to try and do that. But if there is a challenge, and if you are not given the seat, any monies that you would have paid will be reimbursed to the families.
But is that not really, though, a bad indictment of the government, in that we know the population growth that we've seen recently, that the school transport plan is not, the bus fleet is not, you know, increasing in capacity to keep up with the population changes?
Well, if you look at it, if we were to look at the eligible pupils on their own, there would be no difficulty in providing. But we are, because on routes where there's eligible pupils and concessionary pupils, we are making every effort to facilitate the concessionary pupils on that routes as well. Like, there's a whole lot of work that has gone on in school transport over the years. And if you see the funding level that has increased over the last 5 or 6 years in particular, we've increased the amount of students that are on it from 120 to 180,000. That's a huge increase in the amount of students that we're providing, and the school transport for every school day is costing the state €3 million to provide that school transport. And if you correlate the entire amount of routes that are and if you multiply walk it out, we'd be traversing the globe multiple times.
No,
the
of
amount
course
that
not.
School
yeah.
transport is, and like, there is an awful lot of work that has been done to accommodate. You know, there's a very high percentage of people that because the eligibility rules and then the concessionary rules, but we are walking through the pilot projects that are there, the 25 pilots, to correlate the information to make sure that, can we improve the service? Mm-hmm. Can we integrate the service better into public service?
Yeah.
And can we also, you know, make efficiencies in it, okay, that we can roll out further
services?
Just
two other questions then. In terms of you want to deliver certainty, not just for schools, the bus providers, everyone like that there, and the concessionary ticket entitlement too. That's where the uncertainty can come in, whether or not there is a ticket and how tickets are allocated through this lottery system, which there must be a better way. Minister, would you agree?
Yeah, well, it's very few places on the lottery system. You know, last year that was down to a very small number, and we had accommodated, insofar as we could, the amount of concessionary. There was a number of routes that we weren't able to, and in some routes that I was dealing with last year, it was because families hadn't applied in time by the close of the deadline. So that's why the importance of the deadline is. But we will be making every effort to try and accommodate everybody through Bus Éireann and the Department of Education But, you know, in an ideal world, we would love to have every route covered and every individual covered, but that's not always practical.
Very finally, obviously, you know, it's a complex bus network and an awful lot of pressure, particularly, I think, on those maybe that are subcontracted. You know, the huge increases. I know there have been some measures introduced to assist private bus operators, which, you know, without them, I think we'd be right in the bother, wouldn't we, Minister? We're heading into a new school year where there seems to be no break in sight to petrol fuel prices. They can't register for VAT. There's an awful lot of issues there. Would you like to see some of that addressed that would make it more, that it would make it an easier space to work? And you know yourself, some of these operators are maybe year two in a 5-year contract, and there's been big changes. What would you like to see in that space?
Well, we have included the school bus fleet and the contractors in the recent cost of living sector that was agreed about 4 weeks ago. That has been included. Yes, we understand the challenges that are there. And the international challenges that are out there, not caused by... we have to deal with it as an Irish government. We have to deal with it and put huge pressure on to deal with what is going on in international waters. We've seen over the last few days even how volatile the situation is. But it is the value that we hold, the contractors that do the school bus routes is second to none. And there's an awful lot of contractors that are doing multiple routes, and the bus drivers and the contractors who are providing that, I hold in the highest of esteem, because they're providing a very valuable service for our students and for our state. And obviously, we are keeping everything under review, every challenges, but it is something that is, that is concerning in terms of the international challenges that are out there. Not for everybody, but the work that the contractors and the school bus drivers. On the contractor side and the school bus drivers, on our own side, on the bus Éireann side, like the work that they do in difficult weather during winters and everything, the service that they're providing and the regard that they're held by students and by families is second to none. But we are constantly engaging with them. You know, we have a rolling system where there's new contracts for a number of contractors every 5 years. We have a rolling system that has been in place for quite some time, but we are constantly engaging with contractors and their organisations in terms of the challenges that they're meeting.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, Minister Michael Moynihan, Minister of State for Special Education and Inclusion. So what was that all about? Yes, please register for your school transport ahead of the 8th of May deadline. The system is not perfect. There's a lot good about it, it has to be said, but if you're not in, you're not going to get your tickets, so don't dilly-dally. The thing is it has to be paid by May 8th as well, too, which I would say it's the ability to pay is more of a challenge than actually remembering to pay. Now, I didn't put this question directly to the Minister because he's based in Dublin. He's got a huge portfolio, and we can try and find out the answer ourselves because he's simply not going to know. But the caller asks, buses drop students to school from Manor Cunningham to the Royal in Raphoe and Deal College in Raphoe. If you go to the Royal and Prior in Raphoe, your bus ticket is free. It is not free for Deal College in Raphoe. Both are the same distance. Why is one free? Well, let's have a look into that and try and get an answer for you. On Enoch Burke, would all Burke's defenders be jumping to defend him if he was a Muslim and standing for Islamic principles? I'm not sure the point that's being made there, but I'll read it out. Obviously, a boil notice continues in the Downing's Carrigart area. Me and my neighbour in Carrigart, says this listener, we put in our air code for the boil water notice. My code said my water was safe. My neighbours said to boil the water. How could that be? I don't know. I presume, because you're all confused, I presume you're both on the same water line. I don't know. On the issue of littering, Greg, driving on the road from Bridgend yesterday early evening, a Navy car with an end plate, I read that one, yesterday, actually, it threw crap out of the window, didn't it? And it was a Donegal car and then pulled into Tuban. Right, this statue, actually, I'll come back to that after 10 because it was completely off my radar. It's a big 35 million euro moving statue. I really find it hard to believe that we could be spending 35 million euro on a statue given the struggles many people are having in this country. But anyway, thanks for texting in on that. I'll give all the listeners context after 10 and then read your comment as well. Well done to the FTD brothers, who've now raised over £1 million for dementia and Alzheimer's. 33 marathons in 33 days is unreal, and the awareness that they have created is unbelievable. Before now, I'd never heard of frontotemporal dementia. No, neither had I. And I don't know how the human body is capable of what it is in terms of that endurance that they're doing. Morning. In our estate here in Buncrana, there are two petrol quads being raced frequently by two young boys. The homeowners have asked them to stop, but we get not a nice answer. Are they breaking the law? Thanks. Well, I mean, they're on the public space, public highways on quads. It's completely legal. You know, you couldn't race two cars around. You couldn't race two quads around the area. Sorry, two cars. So quads are cars, effectively. Just view them as such. You need tax, insurance, license, etc., and almost a helmet, and they have to be, you know, registered as well. So yeah, they're breaking the law. You should take that up with the local Gardaí. And to be honest with you, in the absence of their parents perhaps trying to help them, you might be doing those two young lads a favour in protecting them from themselves. Caller says, Greg, well done to the Bear Gamble run at the weekend. They raised 85,000. Sorry, when I read that initially, it was 8,500 in my mind. 85,000 for Bumblance. Congratulations to you all. That is a remarkable figure. I'm not even sure if it's the total, but 85K. On the school bus issues, excuse me, please. No excuse for missing that application deadline. My daughter is leaving cert this year, so won't need a bus next year. And we've had 8 notifications about the application between emails and texts. Hi, Greg. We have made inquiries in relation to bus routes for a few years ago. The school we attend is actually closer by main road, but Bus Erin says that we would be accessing a bog road to attend the nearest school. The school bus actually doesn't use this bog road either, so it makes no sense. That was the type of the example I tried to give the minister. And I just think a lot of these problems, if they just reviewed some of the routes and they could work through it, and it would stop much of the problems that we're talking about here. Right, my son has just returned from Canada after 2 years. Great to have him back. He's been working abroad. The absolute hassle he has in trying to change his driving license back to Irish was ridiculous. He returned because he wanted to and because he was offered a great job at home, but part of his job means he has to drive. The change back to his Irish license can take 9 to 12 months. The only thing this delay is going to do is push him out to another country again. Wazers. And if he was getting his own car as well, as far as I understand it too, his driving experience in Canada is not considered when he's seeking to get a quote here either. So he would be potentially insuring his own private car again as if he were never insured in the past at all. But what's taking 9 to 12 months? And is there anything that can be done to fast track that? You know, this is about someone who wants to get back to work and needs to drive for work. That's a problem. And it is a problem we talked about years ago on this program as a factor, a discouragement sometimes for people moving home because it just really is so problematic. Let's go to Ashlawn, and we'll speak now to a member of the Ashlawn Residents Association, Adam Moore. Thanks, Adam.
Hey, Greg. How's it going?
Good. Right. Now, so what is the layout of Ashlawn and what has changed in terms of traffic volume over what time, Adam, just to give the whole audience an overview?
Yeah, well, I suppose Ashlawn is just over 40 years old as an estate. And obviously Letterkenny's changed a lot since it was built. But in the last number of years, we've noticed quite a high volume of traffic coming through the estate with, you know, more local businesses up in the Ellis Menin area. And ATU growing as well, you know, the volume of traffic has increased dramatically and with that incident. So last year we reached out to the council to try and get some data, some metrics, because we knew we needed this to sort of move further in the process of looking to get Ashlawn made a bit safer. So we reached out to the council last year and they placed a traffic counter there last October. And with that, we now have garnered some data and metrics to take back and to try and get a few things changed. Because, the volume is quite high. Some of the stats are striking, for sure, and some of the speeds.
Yep. So what have we learned?
Well, we've learned, I suppose, from that week that the counter was in place, we had roughly 5,500 vehicles coming through the estate. The majority of them were from Monday to Friday. And, you know, and we've had, and then drops, say from the biggest day we had was nearly 1,000 cars on a Monday. And then that drops to, on the weekends, 250. So that really shows that Ashland has just been used as like a rat run for commuters to get through. Some of the speeds, we had a couple of cars topping 70 kilometres an hour. And with that, a few of the real striking ones for me are, of the 5,500 cars, half of them were doing over 40 kilometres per hour in a residential area that has, you know, signs for 30. And then a quarter of them, so 1,300 cars in that week, were travelling over 50 kilometres an hour. So, you know, with numbers like that, you know, it's a matter of when something happens. And we collected this data, but what wasn't collected was, there's a few pain points in Ashland. The top entrance, where vehicles are sort of entering quite fast now to avoid the traffic coming down the Gourley Hill and then leaving Ashland near the ATU. Anyone who's listening might know that it's a very, very narrow lane and it's currently two-way traffic. And when the weather's nice, it's grand, but when it's wet and dark in those winter months, it's becoming a real danger now.
Yeah.
Because we have more pedestrians from.
Yeah, is that road a public road though? I presume it is a public road, right?
Yeah, well, when it was built, it was used for an exit, so it is. But the volume of traffic, it was never built for the volume of traffic,
yeah.
And for the amount of people, you know, some of the stats that I just listed out there, it really shows that it's people are obviously trying to avoid traffic, and I understand that, but it's not safe. It currently isn't safe. We wanted to collect this data so we have actual metrics and data, but we also have our own stories. People who live there will tell you things, but that's not good enough because we need to have the real numbers to go back to the council and say, like, we need something done here.
And what would the solution be? I mean, local traffic only, whereby it's only local traffic that access. Is it narrowing the road to restrict it to certain types of vehicles? Would it be, you know, would speed ramps satisfy? So
those options I think that you mentioned could be in the running. I think for us it's like short-term solutions and then long term. So short term, we need to slow people down entering Ashland. It really is. It's becoming quite a danger now that people see that they're not going to get down the Gourley Hill, so they fly in. So maybe a ramp at the top or something similar like that to slow traffic down. And the same with the bottom. Long term, we need to, you know, I'm sure the council is working on plans for lights at maybe certain roundabouts, things like that. But there's quite a number of issues. So as we said, short term, we need to slow people down in Ashland. Maybe the placement of ramps, there's one ramp at the top and then there's three ramps in quick succession at the bottom. So what people do is, you know, if they're trying to get through, maybe they might get over the first ramp and
put the foot down. And because of the nature of the traffic, it is people perhaps who are under time pressure or are very conscious of time or lack patience or what have you, and then it's just seen as, right, I can bury the foot now. And, of course, we often talk about safety, and that's primarily it, right? Health is wealth, but also it's the quality of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's about the quality of life as well, too, that all of a sudden, you know, a more quiet estate has become much more busy with traffic that really has no interest or respect for the residents in the local area. This is a council road, so presumably it's not as complicated if they decided to implement some of these safety measures.
Yeah, listen, we want to engage with the council. Like, thankfully, they did this last year, so that we did have the numbers. And we got on to a local councillor, Jimmy Kavanagh. He was very helpful in bringing the motion forward to get this survey done. And he has, I think he's put it in his next motion, or in a motion for the next meeting to discuss this this subject, because we want to engage the council and say what can we do here? What's the safest way? But something has to be done, you know, really does. We had a call with the estates office at the ATU last week, and they were very supportive. They have a lot of students and staff in Ashlawn, pedestrians especially. There is quite a lot of footfall walking through Ashlawn, and the lower exit and entrance that is shared with, it's two cars passing plus pedestrians, and it's barely built for a car, to be honest with you. So, and they're very supportive to look after the safety of their students and staff. And you know, that's sort of what we're looking for.
All right, we'll keep a track of the story and see how things progress. It's great to have the data. Isn't it, Adam? Because rather than anecdotal, the people's stories are important, but the data carries great weight. Thanks very much, Adam Moore, member of the Ashlawn Residents Association. So this giant statue that's proposed for Dublin, it's a €35 million moving statue on the docks, and it's being set up as a new landmark attraction for Dublin. The proposal is part of a broader attempt by tourism chiefs to move away from alcohol-led experiences, which I think is a good idea, to give people options. Dublin could be in line, I read, for a new landmark attraction, the world's largest moving human-shaped statue. The giant, more than 30 metres tall, is described as breathtaking fusion of art, imagination, technology and storytelling. And the new 30-foot statue, as I say, is a really high-tech project. So, a caller says, the statue I was referring to is a €30 million project, is described as a moving statue, as it's able to appear to move as it's covered in pixels like an LED screen. I'm curious to know if this is a joke or just another disgraceful waste of public money. We'll take B on that one. It's not a joke. I don't know what's going on. People just, I think, come up with notions. You do this on a smaller scale in your own home. I come up with notions sometimes, you know, stuff that doesn't make sense. Just get it into my head, and I really want to do that. We really need to do that. We, you know, but I think sometimes people do it with public money, and that's one of them. If I wanted to see all the football games between Premier, Scottish, Premier League, European Cup games, I'd need to subscribe to Sky, TNTT, Premier, Now Sports, and Amazon Prime. I don't know what all that would cost, but I know I couldn't afford it, which is why I have a Fire Stick. And I've been told that pubs showing all the games can pay up to £2,000 a month. Do these channels really believe if they get rid of the sticks and dodgy boxes, viewers will flood back and pay these subscriptions? Absolutely not. Yeah, the market is so... it really is hard to track down what games were on what. Like last night's game was on... it was on Prime. They get first pick on Tuesday games. It's all changed next year. The Sky's getting the games back, and I think, is it RT have lost them or won them? Anyway, I don't know. So it's all going to be changed again. You didn't miss much last night, did you, with that Arsenal game? But anyway, they won. Fair play to them. But yeah, and listen, they're struggling. Like, there are newspapers, national newspapers and radio stations that have dodgy box stories on every single day. For whatever reason it is, maybe it's clicks or what have you, but they're really struggling to stop dodgy box usage, if I could call it that. You know, there's always a workaround, and companies have ways of working around it, and really the best they're able to do is sort of catch resellers and then put a few articles in to scare the living daylights out of people. But they're a long way from stopping the use of dodgy boxes and fire sticks, and people feel by, you know, engaging in that, it's a victimless crime, which it's not, of course. But anyway, there you go. Yeah, I know what you're saying. People are being driven. They would pay a fair enough price if the games could be aggregated into one space. But because they're scattered all over the place and you have to pay an absolute fortune to have all of the games, people are being driven to dodgy boxes and fire sticks, I suppose, is the point that's being made there. We're talking the Clonmany Festival because it is going ahead, of course. It's the 57th Clonmany Festival. It's going to run from Sunday the 2nd to Sunday the 9th of August 2026. And you're going to hear the lineup for one or the first time, Shane.
Greg, how are you doing?
Have we mentioned the lineup before?
We haven't, no.
Okay, so that's Shane McLaughlin that you're hearing there. He is the chair of Clonmany Festival, and we're also joined by Aaron Harkin, PRO of the Clonmany Festival. Aaron, good morning to you as well.
Good morning, thanks for having us.
Rightio. So I presume, Shane, delighted to, it was always the case it was going ahead, of course, but there was a little bit of uncertainty, but that's all been put to bed. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, Greg, so we have a new committee formed. We're very conscious that we're stepping into roles that have been done by people.
Why did you decide to, Shane? Were you involved in it previously?
I wasn't, Greg.
So why did you want to step up and say, right, you know what? The people that have done this before have done an amazing job, but, you know, I'm ready to put my time into this.
Yeah, well, we just want to see it go ahead, Greg. It's a massive massive boost for Clonmany. It's a massive thing for any show, even just the wider peninsula. It's great for families coming home. It's a big thing in the summer attraction that people come home from America, Australia, all over the world. It's time to gather. And it's just a great social event for people all over
the country beyond, as you say, they mark that week off. I'm going to Clonmany, isn't that what they say?
Definitely do.
Aaron, why do you decide to get involved?
Just mainly because to try and push the festival's great, as Shane says there, for the whole of Inishowen. It's massive, like, and ourselves, we would have businesses in the town, and it's a massive for like staff, for everybody to have it, to have the festival going ahead. It's a family orientated thing, like. We have events all day, every day and night, so it's a very good thing, like.
It really is one of the festivals with the most packed agendas.
It's crazy, like. You've events from morning to night, like.
And whilst there's a new committee in place, and whilst we're going to be announcing the acts very shortly, an awful lot of this work had already been done as well, Shane.
Yeah, it had.
Because this type of event, you start planning it almost whilst the other one's on.
Yeah, the previous committee, they've done a great job for the last 57 years. They've invested hugely back into the community and the village itself. They've worked closely with the council, local community groups, schools, to improve infrastructure, regenerate parts of the village such as the market house, and they've supported countless other projects in the community itself. They've laid the foundations for the festival we have today, and we want to continue that.
In terms of the layout of it, locations and all of that, is that all the same, Aaron, this year?
It will be, yeah. We're trying to keep it the same as what it's always been. Trying to make it a wee bit more different events, if you know what I mean.
All right, okay.
Some different events, like we're taking in on this closing Sunday a jiving competition, which has never been in Clonmany before.
Is that Shane's idea?
He's good at the jiving.
Brilliant. So let's run through some of the acts that will be performing at Clonmany Festival, 2nd to the 9th of Sunday. It's the who's who, really. Cleona Hagen is going to be performing, our own David James here, Mike Denver, The Tumbling Paddies, Derek Ryan, Claudia and Jimmy Buckley, Johnny Brady, Sinead Black, The Two Bucks, Jason McCahill, Elfie Neal, Effie Neal, and so much more. That's the what we're mentioning today. That's a fantastic lineup at any festival, Shane.
Yeah, it's a brilliant lineup. Probably none in the country would compare it. So it's brilliant. It's just to see the big acts across 8 days. I don't think there's many festivals in Ireland that run an 8 day festival, and it's just great to get that to continue.
Yeah, and I know, Aaron, the acts like playing this festival. It's so unique. Like, you know, I mean, obviously it's fantastic and they're rewarded for their efforts, but, you know, they want to play here. Big acts want to play the big festivals, and Clonmany's one of the biggest.
Oh, Clonmany's, it's massive. Like, the crowds would be, there's acts ringing us every day asking to get on the stage, and it's a massive lineup. Like, it's 8 days of big acts, like.
Yeah, but as you say, there's much more to it than that, right? You've got these headline nights and some afternoons and what have you, but there's a full programme throughout every single day as well, Aaron.
Yes, even like on the opening Sunday there, from after or before 2 o'clock, so 1 o'clock start, would be like a parade going through the town, and there would be, we have a festival queen announced, and then the music would start.
Is that Shane's idea again?
Yeah. Go on. Throughout the week, then you'd have like treasure hunts on foot, and then you'd have car treasure hunts, you'd have sports days, and it's just giving everything a bit for the whole family to come. So if they came for the whole week, they would have something to do every day. Like, it's great. Mm. It's great to have. Like,
yeah, indeed. And Shane, you mentioned right from the get go too. Again, this is no. I'm not casting any. All festivals are run for all different reasons, and some are very successful, some are businesses and what have you. There are a number of festivals, and Clan Manny is amongst them, whereby it's about what it gives back to the region and to the people as well. And, you know, that stuff is there. It's demonstrable. It's there and continues to be. It's the ethos of the festival. That's going to continue under this new committee, is it? That it's about, you know, giving everyone a fantastic 8 days, but also, you know, using it as an opportunity to platform the area and invest in the area.
It is, Greg. It's about bringing in the tourists, letting them see Clamanagh, letting them see Inishowen. It's giving them something to do while they're there, and also benefiting our town and village by being able to invest money back into it, give to schools, give to football clubs, and just put that bit back into Clamanagh.
Without getting into anything, because this is all positive, right? We want to stay in that zone. Some of the old committee went through a tough time, external factors. Having to endure stuff that you shouldn't have to endure, and volunteering in thing many people would feel. You guys, you know, what's your attitude towards that? I mean, are you worried about that?
No, not Greg. No, I say we're a new committee. we're just mainly focusing on just getting the festival happening, making it safe, and make sure it happens. We went through a new licensing program there. We've applied for it there now. So we worked with the council on that, and I'd just like to thank the council, the planning department, the guards.
This is for the live performances on the street.
Yes, this is for the week. So it is subject to license, but the ambulance service, the health service executive, the environmental health, and all them statutory bodies that helped us get that through and on kind of short notice and get it all.
That was a huge piece of work, I imagine, because, you know, the same has to be done in Dunloe, Donegal Town, Ballyshannon for the Rory Gallagher Festival and all that, and the council worked really, really well with local communities. They always have done as well. In terms of volunteers, it's early doors, right, but some people are actually asking, how do they volunteer? Aaron, will you need volunteers, or is there call-out, or is that for future meetings, or what's the crack?
So we will be posting on our social media.
That sounds like someone wants to see David James on the cheap, but I'm presuming, I presume really what they want to do is help the community.
We will be posting on all our socials. We actually have new socials, so if you head on to like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all them kind of things, we have new socials if you want to follow. And in the coming weeks, we'll be advertising about volunteers and coming in to help. But there's we need massive volunteers to help this.
Yeah, of course. So whichever your favourite social platform is check out and search for the Clan Manny Festival. That's where your regular updates will be.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're able here to sort of highlight the headlines, so to speak, but the ground, there's a lot of groundwork needs to be done too, and little announcements and stuff as well. Yeah, so just to remind you, it is going ahead Sunday 2nd to Sunday the 9th of August. Let's hope it's a scorcher. And Cleona Hagen is playing, David James, Mike Denver, the Tumbling Paddies, Derek Ryan, Claudia and Jimmy Buckley, Johnny Brady, Sinead Black, the Two Bucks, Jason McCahill, Effie Neal, and much more. And obviously, it's a reputation, I think, it's a country music festival, has it? But it's good to see the Irish music scene not diversifying, but expanding a bit with the likes of the Two Bucks in there and the Tumbling Paddies as well. Do you know, it's still in the same, it's in the same atmosphere, but it's good to see music evolving a little bit, if that makes sense. Yep. Not wishing to upset anyone, but you know what I mean.
Definitely.
Just different voices, different sounds and all that kind of stuff. Aaron, anything else we should be talking about?
No, Greg, I think you have it fairly sorted. We have a lot of big acts, as you say, but we have a lot of like local acts.
You know what? Great point. And if you want to mention them, some do. I've been critical in the past of festivals whereby for much of the day the stage is empty and there's some pipe music going on. It's a fantastic opportunity to platform our brilliant local performers as well, and yous have always embraced that side of things. Don't waste the stage space. And do the local businesses as well, I presume they form part of this too, with their own entertainment and stuff as well, Aaron?
Yeah, every different pubs, there's an event out in Cis Fairns on the Thursday. It's called the Hooli, where during the day they would have events, and that money's raised for schools as well again. Mm. But all the pubs, there's music on every night in every pub, and events on during the day with music maybe 1 to 3 during the day in the marquee, which would encourage ones to come out and to have a jive or a dance. Mm. And see a bit of live music that suits the likes of the older generation.
Of course,
that
it does.
Well, wouldn't like crowds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it appeals to them all. And you were going to mention, I think, it's not just the headline acts as well too.
Yes,
we've touched on that, did we?
So there's a few local acts, the likes of the Typhoon Generals and the Two Bucks on there on the opening Sunday, and a few local ones there on the closing Sunday. Sinead Black and Owen or Connor Owen, Lauren McCrory and Jack Larry from Bunkrana. Even on the opening Sunday, you would have the Letterkenny Pipe Band is coming down to play.
Excuse me. Congratulations to the new Clonmany committee. It's good to see it up and running. Our own festival was in jeopardy a few years back, and it's great to see the support to get them up and running. Anthony Cahill or McCahill from Lennon Festival there. Good luck to the Clonmany Festival. Great work, lads. Delighted to hear the festival is kept going. All local schools and football clubs, both soccer and Gaelic clubs, have all received much needed funding from the festival. Wishing the festival continued success. Now, the lineup hasn't been completed. This caller says change up the bands or add extra bands, maybe some younger to meet everyone's likes. Well, I mean, there's a lot of fresh faces in there already. But the headline acts are the headline acts. Do you know, that's the bottom line. And people want to see your Mike Denvers and your Derek Ryans. And we're blessed to get them up here too. But I think there's a good mix there, Shane, of, you know, your established headline acts and up-and-coming artists and local artists as well.
No, there is. If the big acts was there, and you're also giving the local lads a chance and getting them on the stage, on the platform. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to play Clonmany, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, okay. Anything else you want to mention, Shane?
No, I just would encourage everybody to get behind us, support us, and come along on the weekend and enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's always big and it's always successful. I think this year, the bigger and more successful it is with all that's gone on, the better.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for you, Aaron? We've touched on it.
No, Shane's mentioned it, just to come out and support us.
Yeah, and keep an eye on the socials too, because there's lots of other stuff during the day for the younger kids and stuff that, you know, we can't mention it all now. And the list then of the list of the acts and when they're playing as well, so people can start planning. Is that going up or up on your socials?
That'll be up in the next few days.
Okay, very exciting. I have it here, so if you want to send me a fiver, I will let you know. But there's some big nights, no doubt at all. Sunday the 2nd looks exciting. Okay, right, and Sunday the 9th as well, and everything in between.
Yeah,
all right, lads, well done.
Thank you very much indeed.
Well done to you and all the committee. It's one thing to stepping up and doing something, you know, it's not for everyone, so fair play to you. It's lovely talking about sort of festivals and stuff that's upcoming, because it shows we're coming into the summer, and although it's cold, colder than it should be this week and next week, it's mostly dry, but it's a sign we're coming into the summer festival season. But some festivals are already underway, because we are right smack bang in it. And Laura Mannion is Marketing and Communications Officer at the Regional Cultural Centre and joins me now. How are you getting on?
Hi, Greg. How are you? Thanks
good
for having
stuff.
Me on.
Yeah, and thank you for calling up on what is the first day of Sound, the Soundtrack Film Festival 2026. So what's this? It's all at the Regional Cultural Centre, right?
Yes, well, we've partnered with Ungrainan, so we have one event with Ungrainan as
brilliant.
Well.
Brilliant. Yeah. A good collaboration. So what's it about, this festival?
So the Sound Festival is a celebration of the art of music and sound and film. So really what we're asking people to do is come in and experience sound and cinema in a whole unique, different way. Mm. So what we're doing over the next few days is we're kicked off today with a schools programme, and we're running until Sunday. And over that period, we have a number of workshops, we have schools events, we have panel discussions, we have kind of nighttime gigs and concerts, and exhibition openings as well. So it's a really busy, action-packed schedule, and we really have something for everybody. You know, that's kind of a cheesy line, but there really is. We have something for the kids. We even have something for the football fans this time. So we've kind of ticked all boxes with it.
Yeah, and when we talk about sound, I mean, people might think you're talking about musicals there, right? But now, I'm on about because some people are more sort of into the nuances and some are less into it. I'd be in the less category. So it's a bit more complex and nuanced than that, isn't it? Sound, yeah. In art.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is, I suppose, there is musicals. There's also soundtracks. There's also, so when you think of soundtracks, that's the songs to films. Yeah. But there's also how a film is scored. So that's the sound that you don't think about, that you just hear in a film, in the background of a film. Then there's also, I suppose, sound and music. So we have like one of our workshops is with Moose Electronics. It's Cian McGannity from Letterkenny. He's a kind of country's leading pedal maker. So it's he creates very unique sounds. He's worked with the likes of Fontaine's DC. So he's running a workshop for us on Saturday on how to create a very unique sound within music. So it's about kind of like thinking about sound and looking at sound very differently. But also then we have some fun events like, as you say, musicals. We have the Jungle Book playing for our kids event on Sunday, which is it's called Little Cars, Big Sounds. Mm. So we're asking kids to come in and make their own cars and then have a drive-in cinema experience. So it's BYOB, bring your own box. And it's probably going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy,
isn't it?
Yeah, but everyone knows Jungle Book. You know, every parent loves Jungle Book. That is a kind of a famous soundtrack musical, I suppose. So back to basics. Yeah. So there is something for everybody.
Just in relation, the one thing that I would speak to a lot of students on this program, either in studio or maybe out and about in their educational setting, and the one thing I've noticed, and I'm not sure if it's all over the place or just here, is a particular interest in film production, movie making behind the... Not, it's not all like, I want to star in the... You know, it's like wanting to get involved in sort of the behind-the-scenes stuff and all that. So when you talk to some of those workshops and other events, for the likes of those students who maybe want to explore their interest, would there be much for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm showing my age now, but we grew up with the only music video or any way to interact with video was on MTV. Mm. But, you know, the younger generation students, like you said, it's all about short form content for them. They're looking at video all day long. So they experience it completely different. And music video is very different than you and I. So they do have a real interest in it. And one of the workshops we're actually running is with React Productions. You might know Kieran and Sean from React Productions. They're proud Donegal people and they're kind of at the forefront of this, sort of creating these viral video content. So they're running a workshop with us on Saturday at 12:30. And there's still some spots left in that, actually. And that'll be really popular, again, with that younger audience who are used to, you know, want to make those short videos, make their own content, and make music videos in particular.
Yeah, Ailish Doherty, you mentioned, did you?
Yeah, I haven't, but I would have brought her up,
please do, because in terms of building an artist, the likes of CMAT, who is, you know, has exploded, it's like an overnight success over 4 or 5 years sort of thing, isn't it? But I'm not saying that's the CMAT's approach, which she's built. But there's elements to it and there's reasons as to why that success is found. And Ailish Doherty's, you know, played an important role, I think, in sort of establishing brand CMAT, if I could put it like that.
Absolutely. So one of the things we're really proud about this festival is that it kind of showcases the really strong talent we have in Donegal, the people who are working and living here doing great things, and those like Ailish who are from Donegal, she's from Letterkenny, who is really at the very forefront of this industry doing phenomenal things. So she's created, I think it's 4, potentially 5 of CMAT's most recent videos. If anybody's watched the one with Jamie Oliver recently, that's her work. Mm. And we're delighted that she's coming back on Saturday to be part of a panel discussion with Sean Patrick Mullen and Louise Gaffey, two other video makers who are, again, at the forefront of this profession, to talk about the art of the music video and how it's changed and kind of give their perspectives on what, I suppose, how you can get into the industry, the challenges that are in it, the exciting things they're coming across.
I'd say as well, too, practically, you have to do more with less.
Absolutely.
Because of, you know, you talked of MTV a little earlier on, you know, music videos are still important, but your audience is different. You know, it's not people sitting down to watch Top of the Pops or something. I know there's a lot of live support. Now, again, how does Gary Keane fit into this as well, too? Because we've all been about sound, right? But he made a highly... award-winning documentary. It's won a lot of awards, and it's told entirely through sign language, Irish sign language, in fact. So how does that fit into a festival about sound?
Well, that's an interesting question. And it is, as you say, a beautiful film. And we're delighted we're showing that tomorrow night in the RCC as part of our Sound Festival. And Gary, thankfully, is coming up to join us for a live Q&A. So you can ask him all these questions in person if you come along tomorrow night. But I suppose that, as you say, it's the first Irish film ever to be done entirely through Irish Sign Language. So there's very little speaking in it. It's subtitled. So sound is actually really important in that. Like how they bring to life the stories. There's three story arcs that run through it. There's all three deaf couples. One couple, Protestant and Catholic, who met in the Troubles, both deaf. There's a deaf same-sex couple who have one hearing child and one deaf child, and then a boxer who has to go through kind of major life decisions around his hearing. So three kind of very different stories, but how those emotional moments are brought to life, sound is key in that. So that's why we picked this film to be part of this festival. And like I say, Gary also is from Donegal, who again is at the forefront of this business and living here, working here, and it's nice to be able to hear from him in person.
Fionn Robinson is up as well. So what is the project? Is he going to be talking about a project he's working on, or are people able to see the project that he has worked on, or what's the...
This is the one I mentioned about the footballers.
Yeah.
We have... we're all obsessed with the 90s these days. Were they happier times? I don't know. There were definitely happier times in our World Cup success.
Well, there were happier times because I was in my 20s.
Yeah, exactly. But there were definitely happier with our World Cup success. So we have reimagined. Finn is the one of four musicians. So Finn Robinson, Laura McFadden, Mark McGeer and Ari McBurty, who have been commissioned to compose a kind of once-off soundtrack to go with the USA 94 Italia versus Ireland match. So everyone will have watched that match. Some of us, Greg, will remember watching it live. Their famous Ray Houghton goal. But you'll never see it like this, where it's kind of been dramatised with music.
Brilliant.
So it's going to be very different. It's going to be
a
bit of crack.
And that's completely unique to this festival.
Completely unique to this festival. It's a live piece that we've commissioned.
Brilliant stuff.
We also have DJ Dano playing on Saturday. So a lot of people would know Dano from around town. It's Daniel McGarrigle. But again, we're doing something completely different with Dano. So it's he's created what we're calling the Cinematic Rave. So he's taken bits from famous films that everyone will know, and he's mirrored them with music. So it's kind of an audiovisual extravaganza. So that's on Saturday.
Yeah, a lot going on for lots of different people. It began today, runs until the 10th at the Regional Cultural Centre with an event in Ungrian on as well. How do people find out more information about the various stuff we've been talking about, i.e. when it's on, if there's any tickets available, how to get a ticket, etc.?
Yeah, exactly. Just go onto our website, so regionalculturalcentre.com, and also we are on all social media platforms, or you can just give us a call. So we're 074-919-298.
Stuck in the 90s.
I know. 86.
What is wrong with you?
I know. We're all stuck in the 90s.
Give us that number.
If only, Greg, if only.
Give us that number.
It's 074-919-298-86.
Good landline number there. All right, Laura, and we'll obviously retain that number here if you want to give them a call. Laura Mannion, Marketing and Communications Officer at the Regional Cultural Centre. Enjoy the next few days.
Thank you. Thanks.
I want to mention for you that you would know listening to Community Garda information, and I'm not saying this is the reason this meeting is being held, but anyway, you'll know listening to Community Garda information that Donegal Town was getting mentioned quite a bit, with cars being interfered with and stuff like that there. So I think it's timely, if it's not the reason, that they are looking to establish a Donegal community alert system. So there is a meeting taking place to that end. If you'd like to get along to that, you're invited to come along to the community alert meeting to help set up a new local community alert group supported by An Garda Síochána. So you can hear practical home safety advice from the county's crime prevention officer. It's tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the John Bosco Centre. So, as I say, if you have any concerns about security and would welcome the establishment or re-establishment of a community alert system, we do need to be the ears and eyes of each other as well. There's going to be some useful information there. That's all 7:30 in the St. John Bosco Centre tonight. Now, Clonhilly Golf Club has started building a new clubhouse and are developing the golf club with a focus on increasing youth, family and community involvement. And Joe Mangan is captain of Clonhilly Golf Club. Good morning to you, Joe.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, based in Falkara, it actually established 1996, so its history is relatively short. So this is a big jump forward, relatively speaking, in the young life of this, what I'm told, is a very nice golf course.
It is. Most golf clubs, when you talk to them, their history goes back decades, and some of them over 100 years. Ourselves in Clonmacnoise are a relatively new club in comparison to those. But in those 25, well, coming up 30 years next year since the first ball was hit in Clonmacnoise, we've come on leaps and bounds. When I talk to some of the founder members down there that say before they went out, they would have to actually strum the rushes from the fairways. And we've come a long way from that. But it's nice to see those people are still involved, heavily involved in the club. And without a doubt, this was a community project from day one in 1996 and still has the same community feel about it. It's community driven. And at the moment, in the last year or two, we have seen a huge increase in young members, youths, students, teenagers taking up the game. We've put a very strong juniors set up in there. And for all of us involved, one of the most rewarding things is seeing these young people out on our fairways and some very promising young golfers there as well. And they're our future, and that's what drives us on with the likes of this project of the new golf clubhouse, as well as that we're the people that started this club back in 96, 97, well, we're just standing on their shoulders now as we drive it on to the next stage with this new clubhouse and their vision. At that time, we're trying to replicate that now with our during our tenure as having a vision to drive it to the next stage.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I love to see the young getting involved. And I love to see, you know, more now than perhaps we ever did, golf clubs breaking down any maybe false narratives or stigmas that this is a game for everyone. And you know, you can get involved, really quite cheap compared to other sports, for an example. So just briefly, if you don't mind, Joe, this is an opportunity too for, I suppose, people to invest themselves financially into the future and the ethos of the club. So what is the Legacy Fund and how can people get involved?
Well, the idea of the Legacy Fund came about. We have our monthly draw that our members support very strongly. And we were looking for something that was not always happening to our members, which often happens in these organisations. So the Legacy Fund is for anybody that would like to support us. There are three different packages there, 100, 1,000 and 5,000 euro donations. The 100, you will actually gain money because part of that, what you get back is a complimentary four ball, which is worth more than the 100. But really what we're asking people to do here is if you've got any involvement, be it with young people, be it with the community here in Clonmacnoise, or just in general that you kind of like to see, like what we're doing, it's about getting behind a small community group that are really working hard to do this. There are people all over the world now. We're tapping, hoping that the diaspora will come on board, and there are lots of people from our area dotted all over the world. And we're hoping that they see this as something that maybe when they left here there wasn't an opportunity to go out in an evening. Like yesterday evening there, I went out and played 9 holes, and that's one of the nice things about this. You can go out and play 9 holes any evening, and one of the great things about our club, it's not that busy, so you're often, you have the course to yourself. And it's a great facility for the people. Okay. There's a strong ladies group there now as well, young and all age. The great thing about golf, there's not many sports that I can go out and play along with my son or my father, and that each of us can compete equally. And yeah, there's very few, I don't know of any other sport.
There isn't any, I've often struggled this.
Sports you can do that.
You can go out and play with Rory McIlroy as well, as a four ball, the 4 years. All right, Joe, listen, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Great to see that ethos and that drive. If people want more information on the Legacy Fund and to be part of, you know, something important in the community, check out the Facebook page, I presume, and the website, Clonmacnoise Golf Club.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Bye-bye. That's where we leave it on the show today.